The lecture hall was about two-thirds full, holding roughly 200 people, most of them students. Anya and Rue sat in the middle toward the back. She guessed some of the older members of the audience were teachers. A few had briefcases at their feet. Anya had done a little digging into Dr. Lawton's credentials, discovering that he'd inherited money from more than one source, some of it old money, and that had put him in a position where he'd never have to work again. She was surprised he even bothered to teach. Maybe he was like her and just had a passion for his work. Unfortunately, he also had a passion for thievery and was likely connected to the murders of the Buddhists and Scientologists. And who knew what else? Rue turned to the student sitting to his left. Anya, on his right, leaned slightly forward to get a look at the fellow Rue was talking to. He was in his 20s, nerdy-looking, with a sweater vest, thick glasses, and short, slicked-down hair. He had a clipboard on his lap with a legal-size pad on it, and he played with a marker, twirling it in his fingers. Despite his scholarly appearance, he appeared to be fit and muscular, and old-fashioned. Most of the other students had iPads and netbooks.
He hasn't had a lecture like this for a while?
Usually only once a quarter, though last year he had one of these talks every few weeks. I don't think he gets paid any extra for them. They're not part of the regular curriculum.
Then why?
I don't know. Some of his students, I'm one of his seniors, become very interested in a specific area and there isn't class time to cover it. So he hosts a special lecture, like this one, Charlemagne, the Second Coming.
So tonight is entirely on Charlemagne? Well, he seems like a fascinating man.
The professor? Oh, yes, definitely. The professor is probably the most fascinating man I've ever known. I've decided to write my master's thesis on Charlemagne's lasting influence on modern-day France. If it hadn't been for Dr. Lawton, I'd be picking up a teacher's certificate and be stuck at a high school in Nice, where my parents live. He opened my eyes. Did you know that Dr. Lawton is a descendant of Charlemagne? It's not published in the university listing, but if you study with him long enough... Oh,
Dr. Lawton, a descendant of Charlemagne? That could well explain the professor's fixation on the Emperor. But on the swords? Charlemagne's swords, maybe. But the Wallace sword, Durandal, Honjo Masamune? Unless...
Unless he was trying to equip more than just himself. The twin brothers she'd fought on the rooftops were armed with swords, and swords were used in the murders of the Buddhists. The professor entered, and all eyes turned to him. Anya had to admit he had presence. The way he made an entrance, the way he walked, his whole appearance. He wore a gray suit with a four-button jacket, well-tailored, but a decade or so out of fashion. His hair was pulled back, and the features of his face seemed so pronounced that she guessed he wore makeup.
Charles the Great, or Charlemagne, is perhaps the most important historical figure, certainly in France, but also throughout all of Europe. King of the Franks, he inherited the crown with his brother, becoming sole king some years later after his brother's death. He inherited more than a title, however. With it came the moral obligation to protect the rights of the Holy See. He warred against the pagan Saxons in Germany, insurgents and the Moors in Spain. In 800, the Pope crowned him Emperor of the Western Empire. Charles brought order during one of history's most tumultuous times. He left behind an indelible and unforgettable history, much like the mark Christ made on the world. Simply put, Charlemagne was Christ come to earth again. Christ had his 12 apostles. Charlemagne had his 12 peers. Christ sought to save humanity through his death. Charlemagne sought to save humanity through the dissemination of Christianity. The goals are the same for the man who is the third coming, who is among you even now. Charlemagne, the Second Coming, gathered 12 men and equipped them with God-touched weapons. Roland's Durandal, Oliver's Hauteclerc, and Otwell's Corrogue, among others. Charlemagne made religious reforms and was given the titles of Augustus and Emperor. Christ was King of the Jews. Charlemagne was the father of the Holy Roman Empire. Christ was the son of the Ultimate Father. Charlemagne and Christ, and the one who is the Third Coming, stand out from all others as personifications of selflessness, nobility, and as conquerors of pagans and heretics. They set out to build a city of God. One emperor, one pope, one city of God.
One emperor, one pope, one city of God!
Drive out the non-believers! Only Christians should live in the city of God!
Charlemagne the Scholar read extensively and treasured the works of Augustine of Hippo, who espoused the creation of such a city and championed any war considered just. The church was St. Augustine's city of God, but Charlemagne knew the church wasn't enough. That one city on the map wasn't enough. Charlemagne sought to make all of France and beyond his city of God. Unfortunately, he died before he could realize his goal. He succeeded in driving Muslims out of the Christian world, but not all of them. Perhaps in the third coming, Charlemagne's plan will be realized.
Anya slipped out of the auditorium during the excessive adoration, Rue following.
I've heard enough.
Quite. More than enough as far as I'm concerned.
In the hall, watching them like a sentry, stood Arshar Gion. It had been raining outside. Arshar wore a raincoat, and the shoulders and sleeves were drenched, his hair slick with water. A little puddle had formed around his feet.
Is the lecture done already?
Anya looked around Rue to where the girl who had spoken leaned against the hallway wall, with two others diagonally across from Arshar. They had the look of freshmen, and wore jeans riding low on their hips and tight, plunging sweaters. The one who had spoken had dark brown hair, irregularly cut. Her earrings dangled below her shoulders.
I said, is the lecture already over?
The lecture hasn't finished.
We're waiting for our boyfriends. Oh, they're so caught up in all that historical religious crap.
We left early.
Wish John would leave early. You a professor?
I've had enough of this.
Anya headed toward Arshar, then pivoted on the ball of her foot and started down the long hallway to the parking lot. Rue followed, with Arshar trailing behind them.
Would you like to see Durandal? Miss Creed?
Yes.
I will give you that courtesy. I think you appreciate fine swords.
It doesn't belong to you.
Ah, Miss Creed, it does. I was destined to have it. Roland Rebord.
No.
I didn't ask you, old man.
Yes, I would like to see Durandal.
In my car, in the faculty parking lot.
Arshar took a step down the hall in the opposite direction, then stopped and looked over his shoulder.
I'll not repeat the invitation, Miss Creed.
Anya brushed by Rue and hurried after Arshar. It was still raining. It had rained most of the time she'd spent in France, matching her dark mood. The faculty parking lot was nested in the center of a U the building formed. A few lampposts illuminated about a dozen cars, with shadows from the brick walls around the lot, making the place look like a scene in a noir film. The blacktop looked liquid in the rain. Anya paused just outside the back door.
Won't Dr. Lawton disapprove of this? You showing me this sword?
God-touched sword, Miss Creed. My mistake. I thought you'd truly want to see it, your connection to the divine and all. I rescind my offer.
Dr. Lawton...
I do not always agree with him, Miss Creed. I believe in him, and I trust him completely. But he and I do not always agree. And the invitation was only for you, not your companion.
Anya hadn't heard Rue come out the back door, but she had picked up the scent of his cologne.
Good night, Miss Creed.
Arshar turned and threaded his way through the cars.
Wait. Stay here, Rue. Keep an eye out. I don't like this.
I don't like it either.
Anya hurried after Arshar, splashing through puddles.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to...
He raised a hand dismissively and kept walking. She watched him. Fit, but not an athlete. He didn't strike her as someone who would have been able to scale the wall and reach the sword in Rocamadour. Luke, or his dead brother, was athletic enough. Anya was practically at his shoulder now.
Who got Durandal for you in Rocamadour? Who stole it?
She reached out and caught him by the arm. At the same time, she felt for her sword, sensing it was poised, ready to appear.
Who stole it?
The sword is mine by right. It's not theft to retrieve something belonging to me. Your sword. Did you steal it?
What?
Did you steal it? Or is it yours because of some divine right? What does it matter how we come by something that we are meant to have?
Arshar walked around a four-door Navy Renault Koleos, a family man's car. He reached into his pocket and pulled out a key ring, pressing the button and popping the trunk. The trunk light was dim and revealed a piece of dark material. Arshar leaned in and pulled the fabric back. The sword had been reforged, the broken point rejoined with the piece that had hung in the cloister in Rocamadour. It had been cleaned, too. The tempered steel blade gleamed, even in the feeble light. The pommel was leaf-shaped, covered in gold and decorated with figures in relief. The quillons were lions' heads, mouths opened and curved toward the blade. Anya leaned closer to get a better look.
Beautiful.
To call it beautiful is to insult it. Such a word isn't adequate. It once belonged to Hector of Troy. It came to Roland by Malagigi. Would you say Malagigi stole it? Did Roland steal it? Does it matter if I stole it? It was meant to be mine.
It's not yours.
God touched. Did you know that there is a tooth of St. Peter in the hilt? A saint. God touched. And though it has bloodied many men, it also has blood in it. Drops of St. Basil's blood are in the hilt and were put in the steel as it was forged. Blood of a saint. Doubly touched by God.
Achard.
The Blessed Virgin Mary herself, Mother of Christ. A piece of her raiment, her cloak, is in the pommel. Do you know the song of Roland, Miss Creed? Lords, my barons.
And you are Dr. Lawton's Roland?
To Saragossa, the Saracen Den.
I got
den.
The impression you followed Dr. Lawton like a puppet.
I, said Roland, will blithely go.
But who follows you, Archargillon?
Distraught was Roland with wrath and
you
pain.
Nuts, too.
Anya reached for Durandal with her left hand. With the right, she grasped her own sword. At the same moment, Archar grabbed the trunk hood. He slammed it down hard on Anya's shoulder blades. She pushed the hood up and whirled. Anya kicked out and connected with Archar to send him reeling. She called for her sword.
Thief. Worse than a thief.
He kept himself from falling, stepped back, hands raised defensively, his expression unreadable.
Rue! Trap!
Anya pointed the sword at Arshar's belly. She held her blade with her right hand and with her left reached behind her to the trunk, feeling for Durandal.
We're going back inside and we're calling the authorities. You might think you've got a right to this sword, but you're not Roland.
A bullet whizzed by her head. She spun to put herself fully behind the trunk, using it as a shield and keeping an eye on Arshar. A second shot spat by.
Rue, look out! There are more of them!
Put the gun away, Sarah! We don't want her dead.
I would have gotten you out of the parking lot one way or another, Miss Creed. But this way you get to see Durandal first. My gift to you.
Some gift.
Anya lunged. She brought her foot up and swept his leg forward, catching him off balance. He tried to recover. Anya raised her sword and brought the butt of it down hard on his shoulder. He dropped to his knees and she jumped out from behind the car. Luc Niveau advanced on her, a sword in each hand. There were two more figures behind him, each with a sword.
This is great.
Anya looked toward the back of the building, where the light was brighter. Rue had been standing just outside the door, but he wasn't there now.
Rue?
Anya crouched, avoiding Luke's swinging blades. Then she jumped back up, slamming the trunk lid to keep Arshar, at least temporarily, from getting Durandal. Anya spotted another man on the far side of the car. She skittered back a few feet to put some distance between herself and Luke, and to find a car to set her back against. Luke was approaching from her left. The one on her right was stocky and had a barrel chest. Anya remembered him from the stairwell attack in her Avignon hotel. Anya could certainly see the weapons clearly. Luke was still wielding Hanjo Masamune and a saber. The fellow on the right, a massive two-handed blade. Despite the deepening shadows, she knew it to be the missing Wallace sword. Lawton's Paladins.
Anya! Take care!
Rue was engaged in a sword fight with a foe she hadn't seen. Rue was good, a paladin of Joan of Arc and a veteran of battles that stretched back through the centuries. With him on her side, somehow, they just might get out of this. Anya rocked back against the car, avoiding Luke's next swing. She spotted Arshar moving to his car again and popping the trunk. The two men closing in behind Luke wore tight-fitting clothes that wouldn't hamper their movements. Maybe students of Luke. The stocky man with the Wallace sword swung the two-handed blade around his head. Anya sprinted at the stout man, ducking beneath his arms. She drove an elbow into his stomach, and it felt as if she'd slammed her arm against a brick wall. Spinning around behind him, she brought her sword about, slicing at his side and cutting through his heavy vest. Anya wasn't sure if she'd reached the flesh beneath. But she swung a second time as he turned to face her, connecting for certain this time, rewarded with a spray of blood when her sword cut through his shirt.
Burn in hell!
I guess that hurt.
Anya leaped, landing on the hood of a nearby car and jumping up to the roof. From here, she could see Rue. He was engaged with three swordsmen, and she saw the woman leveling the gun at him, trying to draw a bead.
Come down, Miss Creed. You can see that you're outnumbered. You don't need to suffer injury.
A glance at the man with the Wallace sword and the line of blood across his stomach told her she'd hurt him, but not badly. His face was twisted in fury. There were a few lights on in the building overlooking the faculty parking lot. She hoped someone would glance out a window and call the police. Lawton's lecture couldn't go on too much longer. At the far end of the lot, Rue was still fighting with the other three swordsmen. He was amazing, keeping the three from landing even a single blow.
Your poem ends badly. Roland dies.
Heroically, for God and for Charlemagne. I don't consider that a bad ending.
Don't make this easy.
Never.
Anya leaped at him, clearing the hood. Heel out. Anya caught the side of his head. She brought her sword down and slid it along his. Anya jerked the blade, catching the crosspiece of his saber and sending it spinning out of his hand. She vaulted onto the trunk of the next car and skittered up to the roof. A quick look toward Rue told her only two men were fighting him now. The five swordsmen surrounded the car she was perched on. This time, Luke was the one to hang back, cupping his hand against his stomach before stooping to retrieve his saber. From above them, someone finally looked out one of the windows.
Hey, what's going on over there?
The police! Call the police!
Truly, Miss Creed, let's end this. No reason for anyone to die here.
Can we just finish her off and take the sword?
No, we are not to kill her.
But I have no such constraints. I can kill you. Now, back off and let my companion and me out of here.
Get her!
This is going to become bloody.
Anya slid down the windshield and landed on the hood. She swung at a man who looked vaguely Asian, her blade biting into his neck. Anya dashed forward, trying to take her fight closer to Rue.
Crescendo!
Crescendo's down? Not crescendo!
Stop! The police are coming!
About time.
Company!
Again, the woman fired at Rue. Anya wondered whether her aim was good, and Rue had the luxury of ignoring bullets, or if she was just a lousy shot. Two down in any event. No sirens yet, but a handful of students spilled out the back of the building. They grabbed for their cell phones, some making calls, some taking pictures.
Miss Creed!
Anya spun to see Arshar on the car, drawing Durandal back. Arshar swept the sword at her. The flat of the blade caught her in the midsection, just enough to put her off balance. Someone else landed beside her on the car, which rocked on its shocks. She crouched to steady herself and stepped sideways so she could keep an eye on Arshar and on the other. Luke.
Finish this. Wrap it up.
Arshar waved to his men. Then he took another swipe at Anya. The tip of Durandal caught her jacket and ripped it, momentarily tangling her in the fabric. More students were edging out into the parking lot.
Keep back!
A campus security officer pulled his gun.
Don't!
Anya dodged another lunge from Luke. She easily sidestepped Arshar's attack. He wasn't in Luke's league. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw Rue clock one of his attackers on the side of the head, dropping him. And she saw Sarah turn and fire on the security guard. The man tottered, and Sarah fired again. Then the rest of hell broke loose. Three police officers rushed out the back door. Sarah took two down before the third spotted her and raised his weapon. Sarah dispatched Batman, catching one of the onlookers, too. In the next breath, the students scattered, some retreating into the building, the rest madly running in all directions like disrupted ants. A police van pulled into the faculty lot. Luke's saber dug into her calf. Almost instantaneously, Arshar landed a blow against her back. Anya leaped back toward two cars to use them as shields. The man with the Wallace sword grabbed her ankle, pulling her down and reaching up to grasp her sword. Anya struggled out of his grip, then Luke pursued her. He slammed her against the asphalt. He drove the heel of her shoe onto her left hand. Anya felt the bones break and ground her teeth together to keep from crying out. Flat on her stomach, she managed to swing her sword at the stocky man, connecting. Anya rolled over on her back, still cramped by the confined space. She tried to sweep her blade up, but hit nothing. Anya almost succeeded in righting herself. But Luke jumped on her arm and drove his heel down on it again. She felt more bones break.
Stop it!
Arshar held Anya's sword arm down. The three men, squeezed in between the cars, barely managed to keep her immobile. Anya was strong, but they were heavy. Luke landed his heel hard against her arm one more time. The pain was awful, and she concentrated on staying conscious.
Stop.
She killed Gaetan.
Alive. We need her alive.
He reached for Anya's sword, but his fingers closed on nothing.
You can't have it. You can't.
She no longer heard the sirens. Anya registered stiffness. When she tried to rotate her shoulders to work it out, she discovered she couldn't move. It was worse than not being able to move. She twitched, and pain racked her. A martial arts instructor once told her that pain is the body telling you that you are alive. Anya opened her eyes and saw only shadows. She was tied to an uncomfortable chair, secured so well that her attempts to wriggle free met with failure and only made her feel worse. In fact, she wanted to get the license plate number of the pickup truck she was certain had run over her. There'd been too many of them, and they were too good. Anya had fought against swordsmen before. Some individuals better than the ones she and Rue had gone against.
How long ago? Minutes? Hours? How long have I been out?
But there had been too many for her and Rue. Her fault. She was the one who'd obligingly marched into Arshar's trap. Anya tested her jaw. It was sore, but it moved. Her mouth was dry. She'd been out for quite some time.
Is there a part of me that doesn't hurt? My eyelids, maybe. Pain is the body telling you that you are still alive.
Anya felt very alive. Her leg, which had been healing, was hurting again, and bleeding, though not a lot. She felt the congealed stickiness of drying blood against her leg, essentially gluing the fabric of her pants to her skin. Her neck ached from the way they had her tied to the chair. Her hands were behind her. Anya cringed when she tried to wriggle free of the knot again. The cords were tied in such a fashion that even if she called for her sword, she wouldn't be able to hold it. It felt as if biting ants were crawling all over her left hand, and she could barely twitch her fingers. Several of them were broken. She could tell that her left arm was broken, too.
How badly?
It had happened when she went against the man with the Wallace sword, and Luke. She'd seen the viciousness etched on his face when he mashed her arm.
My ribs?
Few of them might be broken, too. She should be on a stretcher in some ER, not tied upright to a chair. She should be anywhere but wherever here was. It had been quite a while since she'd been beaten like this. Twice now, in a handful of days, she'd been battered to a pulp. Twice, Lawton's men had brought her close to death. Wherever they were holding her felt cavernous. She couldn't see any walls, but it had that big feel to it, reminding her of times she'd spent in caves. The air was still, with no hint of a breeze. She concentrated to pick through the scents. Old wood, oil, dried sweat. Hers. A hint of exhaust. She was still in the city.
Is Rue nearby? Have they captured him as well, or did he escape?
Listening, Anya couldn't hear anything at first. She squeezed her eyes shut, counted to 10, and slowly opened them again. More accustomed to the dark, she now sorted through the shadows. Blocky shapes, boxes. No, crates. The place was indeed big and cavernous, and given the smells of old wood, oil, and now the crates, she figured she was in a garage or warehouse. The creaking was footsteps, but they sounded high overhead, as if someone was walking across a floor or rafters. She tried to crane her neck, but that wasn't happening. Once more, she attempted to worry at the rope holding her wrists. Whatever held her legs and ankles was even more secure. Hot needles of pain laced through her hand, and she gave up.
Anya? Anya!
Rue?
Are you all right?
Fine. You?
I am...
Lights came on, bathing the warehouse in a dull mustard glow. The bulbs hung from inverted tin cones regularly spaced over the assortment of crates, tables, and sections of open cement floor. Anya blinked at the suddenness of it and spotted Rue on the floor, tied like a rolled carpet. His face was crusted with dried blood.
Good morning. I had expected you to wake up earlier. My paladins must have been a little too rough on you and your friend. Who is he, by the way? He's not willing to speak with us, other than spewing expletives. So rude. Your father? Grandfather?
Lawton came around to stand in front of Anya. He'd changed into blue jeans and a long-sleeved turtleneck the color of wet slate. Arshar was with him, as well as Luke, his face cut and swollen from the fight with Anya. A third man was new to Anya, distinguished-looking, but very thin, as if his skin was pulled too tight.
Who is he, your companion? I suppose it doesn't matter. Now, it is not my desire to kill you. You are not an infidel polluting the purity of France, but you do stand in the way of my city of God, and so I will do what I have to. Unless you cooperate.
You're mad.
Touched? Yes, I will give you that. Divinely so. Charged by God and my ancestor with a mission. But not mad. A madman could not be the architect of God's city.
You don't need my sword to build your city.
Your sword is mine by birthright, Miss Creed. In effect, you stole it from me, and all I want is my property back. Simple.
I don't have the sword with me.
My men have watched you, sparred with you. They've seen you pull it out of nothing.
Pull it out of nothing now. Give us the sword, and you can be on your way.
And if you truly think you need a sword in exchange for yours, you can choose from extras I have in my armory.
Though nothing with a name.
Nothing God-touched.
I explained to you before, Charlemagne, my direct ancestor, once owned the sword Joan of Arc wielded. I have a right to it.
To drive out anyone in France who isn't a Christian?
My paladins and I have a lot of work to do.
Why not go after Charlemagne's personal sword? Or Edward the Confessor's? Is the security for the crown jewels too much?
Yeah. Lawton slapped her.
I will have Charlemagne's sword, but I will assign that one to my friend Ulrich. It is yours I intend to wield. Crescendo wielded another of Charlemagne's swords. Now that will be passed along to the next man.
I got it for Crescendo in Vienna. It's where I picked up mine. To you.
I will arm my men only with God-touched swords. Now produce yours!
And you'll let me go?
Of course.
It would be that easy.
Yes.
Anya, do not...
The gaunt man stuffed something in Rue's mouth.
Of course I will let you go.
Go to hell.
Ulrich, please set the stage. She needs a little more persuasion.
My pleasure.
The man called Ulrich retreated into the depths of the warehouse. Testing her bonds again, Anya felt only pain. She suspected all the fingers of her left hand were broken, likely her wrist too. Ulrich returned with two men behind him, carrying split boards. She noticed they all wore swords, all except Lawton. She felt chilled when they arranged the wood around the base of her chair and retreated into the darkness again.
Sarah, she needs something more suitable to wear.
Yes, Dr. Lawton.
Something was dropped over Anya and tugged down so her head came through the neck hole. It was an oversized white choir robe, the sleeves empty at her sides.
Continue.
Let me.
Luke produced a plastic bottle of lighter fluid and squirted the wood. The gaunt man and his two buddies returned with more wood and stacked it around the chair.
Maybe we should have a trial first. Joan of Arc had a trial, so Anya Creed should. You know, if we want to keep it authentic and all.
All right. For you, Sarah, we'll have a trial. The court of Dr. Lawton and his paladins is called to order. Miss Anya Creed, you are charged with... You are charged with theft of my property. My priceless property. How do you plead?
Go to hell.
Guilty. Anya Creed is guilty.
I pronounce sentence, and that sentence is death. It shall be meted out immediately. Luke?
The swordsman lit a match.
For my brother.
Then he tossed it on the planks. Anya was in the worst of her nightmares. The chill replaced by a heat that made her heart pound furiously. The wood started to smoke. Old and dry, it was going up quickly.
Your sword.
The professor gestured, and the woman behind Anya stepped around to the front. She had a fire extinguisher in her hand and a sword strapped to her hip.
Sarah can put the fire out if you produce it.
The flames grew higher, the heat increasing. Her choir robe caught fire at the hem. Through the smoke, she saw the men and the woman raise their swords, like she'd seen the crowd do in one of her nightmares. It wasn't a city of God, it was a city of swords Lawton was building. The flames touched Anya's legs. She'd only imagined the agony Joan of Arc must have felt when she'd been burned at the stake, and now some nut job was giving her the actual experience. Anya's throat burned as the fire spread farther up the robe and reached her pants beneath it. She sucked in a smoky breath, hot tears streaming down her face. Then the chemicals from the fire extinguisher hit her and the wood. The woman Lawton had called Sarah emptied the contents of the fire extinguisher and tossed the empty canister against the concrete.
She won't give up the sword. So what do we do next?
Look, Ulrich, put her in a cell downstairs. Ashar, Sarah, get rid of her companion.
Kill him, right?
As painlessly as possible. Shoot him in the head. Drown him. Your choice, Sarah. As for Miss Creed, maybe she'll have a change of heart with a change of scenery. We'll let her stew for a few hours and then we'll bring her back. Let's make a more suitable pyre in the meantime.
Anya was carried through a manhole at the back of the warehouse and then taken down a crumbling set of stone steps. She was in the Paris underground, the tunnels that had brought her to the city in the first place, to shoot episodes for chasing history's monsters. Luke pushed her into a cell and pulled an iron door shut behind her, turning a key to lock her in. There was an oil lamp hanging from a peg in the hall, turned so low she couldn't see much of her surroundings.
Bring your sword out now, Miss Creed. I'll take it away from you properly, in honor of my brother, whom you murdered. Bring it out!
Anya was still so tightly tied that she couldn't even manage a sitting position. They'd bound her like a pig to be hauled to market.
Bring it out!
She felt for it, the edge of her mind in the otherwhere. She still couldn't move her fingers to grasp it. But maybe...
It is you who will be going to a fiery hell, unless you give the professor your sword. I hope you don't give in.
I want to see you burn, bitch.
Luke grabbed the lantern off the peg, carried it with him for several feet, and then smashed it on the floor. Then there was nothing but blackness.
Rue can't be killed, can he?
Anya lay on her side in the darkness, wondering what had become of the old man, and how Lawton's crew might have disposed of him.
He can't be killed. He's lived this long. But can they bury him so deep, or put him somewhere so remote that he can't possibly return?
She wouldn't look for Rue to save her. Anya had learned in her childhood at the orphanage to depend solely on herself.
But will I need to save him, providing I can save myself?
She summoned the sword, the fingertips touching the pommel behind her. She couldn't hold it, but if she kept in contact with it, the sword wouldn't disappear into the otherwhere.
Oh.
Pain jolted through her limbs as she maneuvered herself so the cords touched the blade. Anya started working on them, moving back and forth. The steel cut into her flesh. Despite the added misery, she didn't stop. While she sawed, Anya listened to dripping water and the squeal of rats. No human sounds, no footsteps. Summoning the sword was just what Lawton wanted, and was the last thing she wished to do. But without the sword, she wouldn't get out of here. Maybe even with the sword, she couldn't. She hadn't gotten a good look at the cell she'd been tossed in. She might not have the tools to effect an escape. They'd taken everything from her except her singed and shredded clothes. After a good several minutes of work, Anya finally cut through the cords and freed her hands. New pain pulsed through her like a rhythmic drum coming up from the fingers of her left hand, thrumming into her shoulder, then her neck.
Pain is the body telling you you're alive.
Now to free her feet. Anya sat up, clasping the sword in her right hand. Her left was next to useless, feeling as if an elephant had stepped on it. At least she had some sensation in it, even if it was agony. Her ankles had been bound with rope thick enough to tie a good-sized ship to a dock. Part of it was singed, but not enough to make a difference. There would be no wiggling out of it. Anya wondered which one of the paladins had managed the knots. She put the sword to them and started to cut.
Be careful that history's monsters don't come chasing you. Well, they did more than chase me. They caught me.
She sawed in time to the dripping water, meanwhile straining to hear other things. Footsteps, maybe a car or siren, something to indicate how far she was beneath the warehouse. She heard nothing above or below. The rope finally cut. She released the sword back to the otherwhere. Anya rubbed at her legs with her good hand, then wriggled around to pull the choir robe off. She stood, gritting her teeth as pain exploded through her left arm.
Damn, but I hurt. This trip to Paris has been one misery after another.
Anya bent her knees, rolled her head, and fought a bout of dizziness. No matter how intently she stared into the darkness, she couldn't see anything. It was like being in a cave without any source of light. She picked a direction and shuffled forward, bumping into a damp wall. She touched it with the back of her right hand and turned, keeping the wall to her right and inching along. Another wall, and she repeated the process, and then another before she found the bars. Anya pressed her face into a gap between them. She smelled the oil from the lantern Luke had broken, and the fustiness of this place. Rats and their waste. Spoiled things she didn't want to think about. She wondered if she'd been near here when she and Raymond and the rest of the crew were filming. With the fingers of her good hand, she explored the bars. Rusting iron, but strong. After a few moments, she found the lock. Suddenly, out of the darkness, she saw a hazy glow. A flashlight beam. Sounded like only one person in a hurry. Anya stepped back from the door and pulled out the sword, holding it in her right hand. Arshar appeared in front of the cell, keys in one hand, flashlight in the other. He peered at her through the bars and saw the sword before she quickly let it go. His eyes widened, but he didn't say anything for a moment.
You are in pain.
You think?
Distraught was Roland with wrath and pain. Distraught were the 12 of Charlemagne.
Great, your poem again.
You are more a student of history than myself, Miss Creed. My interest is narrower than yours. Studies did not come easy to me, so I concentrated on one area. I've patterned myself after one of my favorite historical figures, Roland, favored paladin of Charlemagne. Did you know that some historians think he might have been Charlemagne's nephew? Roland was a Frankish count, glorified in French epics as well as in Italian stories, where the tellers called him Orlando. Roland sounds better, don't you think? Durandal was his sword, He was the only man who openly opposed Charlemagne's plans to make peace with the King of the Saracens. He was the last of the 12 peers to die. Dr. Lawton has decided to kill you. He's going to burn you to death, not just torture you like he did earlier. I am to bring you to him, and he said it would be my honor and responsibility to light the match. But I cannot abide by that. You are not a heretic or an infidel, and perhaps you have as much right to that sword as Dr. Lawton believes he has.
I have far more right.
I pray you keep it then.
Ashar put the key to the lock, holding his eyes on hers.
You cannot go upstairs, Miss Creed. You cannot take 11 people armed with swords and guns.
So the 12 paladins of Dr. Lawton are fully assembled?
Anew. You killed 2 last night between you and the old man. But there were others in his service, waiting in the wings. And they're assembled to witness your demise.
If Lawton wants the sword, doesn't he know that killing me...
He's decided that with you dead, God will send the sword to another. And that he is the only logical other. He believes it is the only way he can come by your weapon.
And what do you believe?
I believe in him and what he hopes to accomplish. I follow him as Roland followed Charlemagne. But I do not believe that killing you is what God intended. You cannot take the 11 upstairs, but there is another way out. To the left, through the tunnels. I would hurry. Dr. Lawton will send someone to check on us.
Ashar turned the key, opened the door, and stepped aside. Anya rushed him, turning the sword so that the flat of it struck him across the stomach. The air rushed from him. Anya hit him again. He dropped the flashlight and doubled over, went to reach for his own sword, but she stopped him. She kicked at his knee with all the power she could summon. She saw in the dimness the astonishment on his face. He dropped to the stone floor. Anya dropped with him, wrapping the butt of her sword against the side of his head. His leg was twisted at a painful, awkward angle. She felt for a pulse, relieved when she found it. Dismissing her sword, she fumbled at his waist, freeing his sword belt. Anya had trouble fitting it on, with only one good hand to work with, but finally managed.
I'll make sure Durandal gets back to where it belongs.
Next, she pulled the belt out of his pants, fastening it around her chest and cinching it tight to hold her broken hand and arm immobile. Finally, she scooped up the flashlight and shone it down the passage in each direction.
So let's buy me a little more time.
Using just her feet, she pushed Ashar into the cell and closed the door, then locked it. She thought about taking the keys with her, but instead tossed them down the hall. It would make it easier for someone to let him out. One way would take her back up to the warehouse, and that's where she wanted to go. Anya wanted to confront Lawton with her weapon in hand, but Ashar said there were 11 with him, certainly all with swords. How many of them stolen? For a madman's insane plan. She picked the other direction, trusting that Ashar was right, and that there was another way out through the tunnels. The corridor narrowed and curved, angled down and split like a snake's tongue. The air was still, with nothing stirring to give her a clue. She chose to go right. Anya barely stopped in time to avoid a break in the stone beneath her feet. Anya shone the flashlight into the hole. There was a chamber beneath, a stack of small crates against the wall. And to make life easy for her, there was a rope ladder dangling down.
Convenient?
Maybe too convenient, if it looks like a trap. But she had a bum arm, and she needed to put distance between herself and Lawton and his paladins. It would be the way to go, deeper under Paris. The tunnels wound their way throughout the city, and would eventually take her to freedom. Then she would go looking for Rue. They'd taken her watch and her cell phone, so she had no clue what time it was, how many hours had passed. And she had no way to call for help. Anya was tired, but her fatigue wasn't an accurate measure of the passage of time. It could be noon for all she knew. She didn't know where she was either, other than somewhere under a warehouse that was somewhere in Paris, and that it was cold here. Anya would have to confront Lawton again, but not until the odds were better, when she had help. A tunnel led away from the chamber, and she directed the flashlight down it. She had no choice. It was the only path available to her without having to go back up a level and try a different route. But Anya knew there would be others. The tunnels beneath the city were a maze of passages and caverns. Something made her pause. The crates. They were wood, each about a foot square, with nothing labeling or identifying them.
Why not keep them in the warehouse upstairs?
They would be harder to get at down here, but also harder to find.
Wine that someone wanted to keep chilled?
She set the flashlight on one and reached for her sword. Anya used it to pry the top off another. Not an easy task with one hand. This could waste a few precious minutes, but might be important. It was the archaeologist in her, Anya thought, always looking to unearth some treasure or clue, even though she should be hightailing it out of here so she could call the police.
What the...
The crate held two silver metal canisters, each the size of a vending machine soda can, carefully nested in packing material. A piece of masking tape served as a label, written in a Cyrillic scrawl. Anya held the flashlight closer. She could read Cyrillic, to an extent, but these words were difficult for her to figure out. She worked on them like a tot in first grade, sounding out syllables. Taben. Somen.
What the hell does that mean?
She set the lid back on and worried another crate open, while her common sense told her to move along, get to the police. Two more cylinders marked the same. A third crate revealed something different. Instead of cylinders, she found some sort of mylar container filled with liquid and labeled with more of the hand-scrawled Cyrillic on masking tape. Sarin. The word froze her. Cyclosarin on the other container.
Oh, hell.
She knew what sarin and cyclosarin were, and Taben and Somen were likely of a similar nature. Liquid nerve gas. They were called G-series chemical warfare agents, developed by German scientists, hence the G. Hideously nasty stuff. And that's why they were down here, where it was cool. At room temperature, they became volatile. Odorless, colorless, and lethal. Enough of it could wipe out entire communities, especially if the wind was blowing, or used surgically in small indoor spaces. There were 9 crates, and if each held 2 canisters, that would be 18 containers of liquid nerve gas.
Why aren't they all the same?
Anya almost immediately answered her own question. Lawton likely hadn't been able to get as much as he wanted from one source. This cleansing Lawton intended, the liquid nerve gas had to be part of it. Murdering Buddhists and Scientologists with swords had been shocking, attention-grabbing, but it had been just a prelude. Anya felt as if she'd just been dropped in ice water. She really had to get to the authorities now, right now. She wished she could take one of the canisters with her as evidence, but no. If she dropped it, she'd be dead, and there'd be no way to report her grisly find. And if she dropped it within range of innocent people, she'd be killing more than just herself. Anya relegated the sword to the other wear, grabbed the flashlight, and hurried down the passage. She paused when she spotted a discarded miner's helmet, but soon saw that its light was broken, useless to her. Maybe she would come across another in better shape, one that might give her a little more light so she could see better and move faster and have her good hand free for her sword. Miners' helmets were standard gear for utility workers, tour guides, and the cataphiles who delighted in exploring the dark web of tunnels. Anya moved on at an almost reckless pace, hoping wandering cataphiles wouldn't come across the crates. Unless they were Russian or Ukrainian, they wouldn't have a clue what the stuff was. Anya hoped she'd come across a ladder that would lead up to the street. She would call out, hoping there was a cataphile within range of her voice, or some city worker down below, checking the stability of the tunnel she was in. But after she was farther away from the warehouse and the nerve gas.
Has Lawton discovered Arshar in the cell yet? Has he sent men looking for me? What triggered Arshar's inexplicable turnaround? As if I believed it.
The next time the tunnel split, Anya took the wider route, where she could move faster. After 100 yards, she came to a mound of rubble where a section of wall had collapsed. Retracing her steps, she took the other branch, its tight corridor slowing her. She had to turn sideways and squeeze through. Maybe Lawton had caused the collapse in the other tunnel to keep people from discovering his nerve gas cache. Anya had to inch her way through now and twist to avoid hurting her broken hand. She thought of Rue to keep her mind off her own predicament. Somewhere, he was all right, she hoped. Or working himself toward being all right. The tunnel widened on the other side, and she stopped. Anya aimed the flashlight ahead. Nobody in Lawton's cadre was small enough to come this way, not even Sarah. Relief washed through Anya. She checked to make sure the rescued sword in the belt at her hip was undamaged.
Safe.
Or as safe as she was going to find herself until she could reconnect with Rue and alert the authorities to all of this. Anya pressed on, training the beam right and left, up and down, looking for other corridors and praying for some form of escape.
Where the hell am I?
She was thoroughly lost in the arteries of Paris, one of the oldest subway and sewer systems in the world. She picked up her pace and let the worries about the liquid nerve gas and Lawton's prospective targets tumble through her head. Rouen had a Muslim community. In fact, Muslims were found in sizable numbers throughout France.
More Buddhists, more Scientologists, more of anything that isn't Christian. And just how Christian is that?
2 years ago, Anya had searched some of the limestone quarries within the catacombs that were located below a cluster of posh boutiques. Anya could picture those old caverns in her mind.
Am I near one of them?
So far, there was nothing familiar here. If she found something she recognized, she could make her way out. In the early 1100s, when Philippe Auguste was king, he'd ordered extensive quarrying to provide limestone for building ramparts to protect Paris.
And who will protect Paris now from Lawton?
The corridor narrowed again and rose, then almost immediately descended again and turned in a serpentine course, doubling back and going even deeper. After a few minutes, Anya found the slope became steeper and slick with water that oozed through a crack in the wall. She had to creep along to keep from falling. It was even colder here, and certainly quite a bit deeper than when she'd first come below. The flashlight beam bounced off water droplets clinging to the ceiling. More rivulets ran down the wall ahead. The air smelled of mold, damp earth, and old stone. Anya forced herself on, skidding to a stop when she finally came to a chamber lined with bones. The dead were stacked like cordwood to her right and left. On a shelf that ran around the entire chamber, skulls were perched, staring at her with empty eyes. More than 6 million bodies were supposedly buried in various catacombs beneath Paris. Some bodies had been buried down here even before the 1800s, when cemeteries became overcrowded, and city officials ordered skeletons to be dug up and dumped into the old quarry tunnels. Archaeologists dated some of the oldest to Merovingian times, others to the French Revolution. The bones in this chamber were the shade of eggshells and old parchment. Femurs were stacked like logs, reaching waist high, and between the puddles that dotted the floor were chips of bone. All of it had a patina that on pottery or art would be considered striking and beautiful. Anya walked softly, tiptoeing around bone fragments out of respect. The tunnel continued beyond this place, and Anya had just stepped into it. An echo? Laughter? She turned to face the bone chamber again and focused on the sound of voices seeming to come from the skulls.
Where are you? Who are you?
She cocked her head. The voices weren't coming from either tunnel entrance. Above her?
Help! Help!
She heard voices again. She finally realized they were coming from a level or more higher. The skulls were acting as speakers to funnel the sound. Whoever was talking probably didn't hear her, but she tried again anyway.
Help!
Damn it.
It was as cold as a wine cellar down here. Anya's stolen flashlight died, and now it was pitch dark.
Damn.
Anya needed to get out and report the liquid nerve gas.
Hey! Help!
She dropped the useless flashlight and groped behind her, running her fingers over smooth bones and broken bones, finding stone. She traced it, the lip of the passage that would lead who knew where. Running her hand along the wall, she tentatively moved forward. At first, she stepped cautiously. Exploring the Paris underground was more dangerous than caving. So many sections had collapsed, and gaps had opened in floors leading to still deeper chambers. One misstep could send her into oblivion, and then no one would learn about the nerve gas until it was too late. The passage narrowed, so much that Anya scraped her shoulders. She went about a dozen steps before it widened, and she couldn't touch both walls at the same time. Another chamber.
Hello!
She chose to go right, walking that way until she encountered something. Stone, then more bones. Her fingers fluttered up and down. The bones reached from floor to ceiling, feeling as if they were stacked in order, with the largest on the bottom, the smaller skulls at the top. Some were fragile, including the skull of an infant. She continued cautiously, probing ahead with her fingers, finding a mound of something on the floor and working her way around it. She walked across small bones. They stretched for a few yards, then her feet found stone again.
Hello? Anyone here? I need help!
Though it was difficult to guess the passage of time, Anya was certain she'd been down here at least an hour. She was undoubtedly missing other passages, but she alternated going left and right, feeling bones here and there and then nothing but stone for what felt like another hour. She tripped in a depression, picked herself up, and felt large, deep scratches on the walls. Initials. J.M. and B.R. The edges were sharp, and stone dust flaked away. They'd been carved fairly recently, by cataphiles, most likely.
Hello? Anyone here?
She kicked another helmet with a broken light, a canvas sack. In frustration, she stopped and leaned against the stone. The cold had seeped into every pore, and Anya's toes were starting to go numb. It wasn't in her nature to give up or give in, so she counted to 9, the number of crates filled with liquid nerve gas, and struck out again. She went another dozen yards or so. Anya hit a dead end. She turned around and followed the other wall back to where she'd been, finding with her feet the discarded helmet and canvas sack. She stretched her right arm out, shuffling forward until she found another wall, then worked her way along it. More carvings. Anya traced them and read, "Jesse, be my wife." She felt a measure of relief at the evidence that someone had been here. That meant there was a way in and a way out, or at least there had been once. She just had to keep hunting. 2 hours, maybe 3. She had to have been stumbling around down here at least that long. Her thoughts drifted to Rue once more, and then to Raymond, safely back in New York.
Has he gotten to hold his grandchild yet?
Her fingers brushed against wood. A ladder. It was old, felt rickety, but it was propped against the wall and would take her to a higher level. Anya stepped on the first rung. She squeezed her eyes shut as a bright light pierced the darkness coming from behind her. Anya turned, cupped her good hand over her eyes, and opened them. The person held a high-powered camping lantern. It cast a blue-white glare against the stone and turned the rivulets of water into molten silver.
Oh, I am so glad to see you. The happiness is mine, Anya Creed. Dr. Lawton will be so pleased with me.
You did well, Sarah.
The speaker set the lantern down and stepped to the side. It was the young woman in Lawton's service. Sarah something or other. Her face and hands were scraped, and her clothes filthy and torn. She'd apparently squeezed through the same impossible tunnel that Anya had forced herself through. Sarah smiled and drew a sword from a scabbard at her waist. Tew, once wielded by Attila the Hun. That must have been as hard to navigate through the narrowest tunnel as Durandal had been.
Are you going to come back with me?
Anya reached for her own sword, wrapping her right hand around its welcome pommel. Carefully, she lowered Durandal to the ground so she could defend herself unhampered.
I guess that's an answer. A bad answer. Now I'm going to have to drag your corpse back to the warehouse. Luke taught me everything I know, and if you don't give up, I'm going to kick your sorry ass. Dr. Lawton made me leave my gun topside, so I'll just have to cut you up.
Anya studied their surroundings. The old ladder was on her left now. Dirt was caked on some of the rungs, and a scarf was tied to an upper one. At the top was an opening, where she wanted to be. The chamber she and Sarah stood in was small, and graffiti had been painted along one wall. A dozen half-crushed beer cans were strewn under a quasi-Egyptian symbol. Someone had tried to spray paint the Eye of Horus, but had gotten it wrong.
What are you waiting for? Afraid? Just hand over your sword and I'll let you leave.
You'd be a hero, right?
The only reward I need is to be one of his paladins.
Christ's disciples, Charlemagne's peers, and Lawton's band of idiots.
Anya's insult worked. Sarah charged her. Anya parried her first blow easily. Sarah was using 2 hands on her weapon, putting as much power behind the swing as possible. She was pretty strong, and Anya was at a disadvantage, still injured, exhausted, and able to use only 1 hand in the fight. But Sarah wasn't as skilled as the other swordsmen Anya had faced. Her moves were classic, but clumsy in comparison to Luke Yvaux.
You should have studied a little more. Luke apparently isn't such a great instructor. Or maybe you're just a poor student, Sarah. You couldn't win a match against a 5-year-old.
I know what you're doing. You're just trying to piss me off.
How about you just give up? I really don't want to hurt you.
Pig!
What is Lawton gonna do with the nerve gas? What are his targets?
Nerve gas?
The nerve gas under the warehouse. I found crates of it.
I don't know anything about that.
The cleansing, you know.
Rouen is for Christians. France is for Christians. It's what Charlemagne wanted. And Dr. Lawton is going to build the city of God that Charlemagne couldn't.
The cleansing, Sarah. He's going to use nerve gas to kill people. Some Christians might get caught in that. Nerve gas is dangerous.
Well, Dr. Lawton didn't say anything about nerve gas. And the voices didn't either.
Voices? But you know about the cleansing.
Sure, I've been cleansing. Good at it. No regrets.
You don't mind killing for Lawton?
Buddhists? They die pretty easily. Scientologists? Muslims?
All that blood on your hands, Sarah.
even got a transgender. No worries. It all washes off.
It never washes off, Sarah. The blood never washes off.
It washes off me!
Sarah jumped back, dropped the sword, and pulled a Sig Sauer from the back of her waistband. She leveled it at Anya and walked backward until she was even with the lantern.
Now, I'd ask you nicely to drop the sword, but you made it abundantly clear that isn't going to happen. Your blood will wash off just fine.
Anya leaped, and the bullet hit the wall behind her. She dropped and somersaulted toward the girl. Jumping up, she swung her sword at the gun, but Sarah had shifted and fired again, the bullet whizzing by Anya's head and hitting stone. Anya felt her hair move and pain tear at her temple. The bullet had grazed her. She adjusted her grip on the sword. Anya pulled back and swung again, slicing open her opponent's stomach. The girl's look of horror lasted only a heartbeat, and then she fell dead. Anya stood over her.
Didn't leave me a choice.
She couldn't risk dueling with Sarah any longer. The nerve gas had to be reported. She stared at the body for a few moments, catching her breath. Dismissing her sword, she retrieved the one Sarah had dropped. She managed to wedge Tew under her sword belt and did the same with Jorindal. Picking up the lantern with her good hand, Anya returned to the ladder and looked up. She held the lantern handle in her teeth. Anya gripped the first rung and started to climb.